the 2013-2014 season of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra has begun, and has begun as it should, with its music director, Ricardo Muti, and with an array of concerts, concert performance of opera, concert performance of a large-scale sacred work, and variety of locations and methods of transmission, including a live webcast and a live presentation in Millennium Park of the October 10th performance, the very day of Verdi's 200th birthday anniversary of the Requiem. We are so happy to welcome not only our music director in Chicago, but I will say, and he can dispute if he would like to, Verdi's music director of today. He has devoted his life to so much music, but Verdi holds a very special and high spot in Maestro Muti's heart and in his mind. And so to have this opportunity to begin the season with a conversation with Maestro Muti about Verdi is a very special one. First, Maestro, welcome back to Chicago.
Thank you.
You will present, or have already presented, overtures, choruses, ballet music, the full Requiem, and perhaps most exceptionally, the full Macbeth, the opera of Verdi, done in concert form with an array of international soloists. How does one decide what Verdi to do? It seems like, on the one hand, quote unquote, a lot in a 4-week period. On the other hand, it's just a small slice of this remarkable man's near century of production. How did you decide what pieces to put in the puzzle?
But the Requiem is a must, in a way, even if it seems a contradiction that the celebration of his 200th birthday, we perform the Requiem. Mm-hmm. But certainly we cannot perform a happy birthday because the man is dead. So the Requiem is something that we would perform for every person that passed away. Mm-hmm. So that's the answer for people that say why in the day. This is a celebration of not of his birthday, but of of Giuseppe Verdi.
I have to say, as we're talking Chicago and we're speaking on WFMT, that reminded me that in 1975, I believe, when the original Mayor Daley, around 76 or so, died, was so unexpected. Everyone thought he's mayor forever, the papa of the city. And he died not far from where we are speaking, at his doctor's office for an exam. And the WFMT said, what can we, as the classical station, do? They played the Verdi Requiem. So it's not only an Italian or a Verdi thing, it's totally
it's
universal,
universal
salute.
Yes, you are absolutely right. And the Verdi Requiem is a must this year. And Macbeth is the second opera after Otello that has just come out in a CD. And the Requiem that we did, as you remember, won two Grammys. But that is not important if they won or not won a prize. I think that the Verdi Requiem, as you said, is the celebration of the entire mankind asking for peace. So it goes beyond the Catholic text. It's a Requiem that can be played for people that believe, people of different religions, people that don't believe. In fact, Libera Me Domine, in the end, the soprano says three times. The first time in a very dramatic way, the second time screaming, in like the fire is around her, that means around us. And the third time, almost without hope, at the conclusion of the Requiem, the soprano sings the last words, Libera me Domine de morte eterna, in die illa tremenda, libera me,
and the Requiem... Free me, release me.
Si, libera me, make me free, si, from eternal death. And this last words, it's interesting that this phrase that, as I said before, the first time is in a dramatic way, the second time in a tragic way, and the third time in a sort of hopeless way, ends on a chord of C major. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that the chord of C major is generally a chord of light, serenity, joy, fact, the creation after the chaos, and the lights appear is a Licht, the C major.
In Haydn, yes.
In a Haydn creation. The Jupiter is in C major, etc., etc. But in Verdi, this chord leaves us in a very uncomfortable feeling, because harmonically we don't know exactly at that point if we are in C major as a tonic, mm-hmm. or if we are in C major as dominant, mm-hmm. of the tonality of, mm-hmm. F or F minor. This uncertainty, si dice così, no? Uncertainty, si. Leaves us in a sort of uncomfortable, not quiet, not serene, not tranquil.
Is the key resolving, or no, is the yeah, key leaving us?
Ecco, bravo, bravissimo. And that is the reason why people, musicologists or critics or conductors, or, said always that Verdi was not a believer, he didn't believe, so leaves this doubt. But actually, I think that the doubt shows the fact that he believed, mm-hmm. in, mm-hmm. something, because if you don't have a doubt, you... But I think also that the people that don't believe, they have a doubt, especially, mm-hmm. in the last moment of their lives.
Uh-huh.
But this happens many times in Verdi, like in Te Deum. Te Deum, that is the last of the four sacred pieces. Mm-hmm. The end, you have the first violin, the violins up in the E natural, very high, very, very high, and the bassi, contrabassi, very low, the same. So in the middle you have the vacuum, mm-hmm. Nothing, emptiness. And this one note seems to go in the direction of heaven and the other in the direction of hell, mm-hmm. inferno. Mm-hmm. And again, this is gives you this why the Te Deum should be a piece, a work full of joy. Mm-hmm. Te Deum of Haydn for Maria Theresia, no? Mm-hmm. An explosion of joy. In Verdi ends again with a strange way. But what is important in the Verdi Requiem is the way he put the music under the text. So just the first word, Requiem, that generally is played pianissimissimissimo, but without almost in a passive way, you know, like you want, people want to imitate the voice of a dead person. That's not the, if you are dead, you cannot have a voice, but you know, the lament of somebody that is dying. And they, people forget that Requiem, it's a request. Mm-hmm. It's not, I want Requiem, I want peace. Give me, mm-hmm. peace. Mm-hmm. So Requiem Aeternam dona.
Give me eternal peace.
So yeah. Give everybody the Requiem, the peace, the eternal peace. So the first word is not just a passive pianissimo, but in the pianissimo you must have a certain energy, mm-hmm. certain the energy that comes from the request that you are making to God, not the Catholic God, mysterious entity that has created us, all of us.
And that we feel a natural need to call out to. Maybe we are calling to an abyss, maybe we are calling to a god of a religion, maybe we're talking to the trees, but we feel this human need to please help.
Yeah. Nature, with the capital N.
Yes, right.
Because, of course, we say we didn't want to come to this planet. Mm-hmm. We come from nothing mm-hmm. or from, I don't know, energy. So you have created me. Mm-hmm. Now you must take the responsibility of my life.
The challenge.
See? And this is the concept of Verdi, Requiem. And the Verdi Requiem is not, usually when we say Verdi Requiem, we think about the Dies Irae. The Dies Irae because you have, it's a very impressive theatrical piece, as Verdi, as a man of theater, had to write in this dramatic way. And also because it's very impressive with the extra trumpets, with the drums, the conductors jumping on the podium, people screaming. But the Verdi Requiem is not the Dies Irae. Mm-hmm. It's really Lacrimosa, mm-hmm. like in Mozart. No, mm-hmm. the Mozart Requiem. We say the Mozart Requiem, but. Only the beginning and the first few numbers are Mozart, and then little right. by little disappears.
The Süssmayr Requiem.
Süssmayr
and others.
And in fact, we can consider a Requiem for Süssmayr. So the Lacrimosa, the Ingemisco, this always cry, tears, and this is so practically is a Requiem of. Mankind that cries, mm-hmm. and that's the reason this Requiem will be forever for all generations to come. And in a way, Verdi, as I wrote in my simple book about Requiem, is the composer of the future, mm-hmm. because Verdi will always be understood, accepted by people of every different country, different religion, different race, mm-hmm. because speaks directly to the heart mm-hmm. of the people in a very aristocratic and noble and sophisticated way, mm-hmm. but direct, without an attitude of extremely sophisticated mm-hmm. person, you know, culture. He doesn't say, I'm talking down to you.
Yeah,
it's like the difference between Gluck and Mozart. Mm-hmm. Mozart speaks like man to man, woman to woman. But Gluck, that is a great composer, but he speaks like he's in the Olympo, mm-hmm. Between mm-hmm. the gods, and looks down to the poor us,
right.
you
know? right.
And so that is why the world of Verdi is our world. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Verdi is in every personage of his operas. Verdi is Falstaff, Verdi is Otello, Verdi is Gilda, mm-hmm. Verdi mm-hmm. is Rigoletto.
Mm-hmm. So and because he is every humanity in the Requiem.
Yeah, and in the Requiem you have the explosion of all these feelings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that really you follow the entire work, but in the end you are taken by this finale. Mm-hmm. Actually, we have to realize that the finale that we have, the Requiem now, is the second finale. that Verdi wrote. When in 2001 I did in La Scala several works of Verdi, not often performed or ignored or forgotten. And the first finale of the Verdi Requiem, Libera me Domine, the last words are given to the bassi of the chorus. Libera me Domine de morte eterna. But I'm sure that because the first interpreter of the Requiem of Verdi was Teresa Stolz, and Verdi had great admiration, and maybe something more than admiration for Teresa Stolz, it's possible that he changed the finale to favor the soprano. And the other one, the first version, is much more dark, with the bassi ending, and the soprano is much more like the cry or the lament of one person that represents the entire mankind.
Mm-hmm. Macbeth is the first of the Shakespeare operas, and of course the Othello is now released, that you did so remarkably with the orchestra and the soloists. You have given it in other cities, obviously, and you're familiar with it over time. Is there a central message or a central aspect of Verdi's Macbeth for you?
See, Verdi Macbeth is a unique opera in the entire production of Verdi's operas, because he creates a work of music that is artistically, we can call espressionismo. Maybe in English is the same word, expressionism.
Expressionism, yes.
Because the Macbeth is an opera of great psychology. Mm-hmm. No? Most of the opera is based on this conflict. Macbeth, Lady Macbeth, the weakness of this great general, and the power of this Lady Macbeth, witch, mm-hmm. more terrifying than,
yes,
the real
than
witches,
the real witches right.
in the opera. And Verdi wants to create something that many times comes more from the mind of the personaggi. For example, Verdi uses in this opera, in Macbeth, indications, dynamic, that he will never use again in such a way in the entire production. Mm. For example, he asks the orchestra sometime con suono muto. And as I explained to the orchestra and to the chorus, suono muto is a contradiction, because if you have a sound, you cannot have a silence. Because mm-hmm. muto doesn't mean muted, means really no, without the possibility of saying the words. Mm-hmm. So how to create suono muto?
Silent sound.
Or con voce muta. Mm-hmm. With voice, but
mute.
Silent.
Yeah.
And then after that, diminuendo.
Yeah. Oh, you're starting at zero, and then you must be quieter.
You have nothing, and then diminuendo on nothing. So it's clear that Verdi had in mind the use of the voice and the use of the sound of the orchestra that was not known mm-hmm. at that time. We are much before the Impressionismo and before the dodecaphonic system and all the experiment of today, but Verdi is much ahead, mm-hmm. and he indicates ways that we still today I mean, we imagine on the paper what is what he wants, but how to produce, this is almost impossible when you want to follow the indications of Verdi. But many times the singers, they ignore this and they shout, you know, and instead of con voce muta, you hear fortissimo of the voice.
And he's using these things for psychological and philosophical effect and commentary, not only, quote-unquote, for musical effect.
Certo, absolutely. He, in fact, Verdi in one letter says that people don't imagine at all what is the concept of sound that he has in mind when he writes. And, for example, the first chorus of The Witches, Le Streghe, Verdi writes for the soprani and for the contralti, etc., non dimenticarsi che trattasi di streghe che parlano. Don't forget that are witches that speak, not even that sing, that speak. So this is a revolutionary phrase. So you have to find a way, how is possible to have the sound of witches? It can become comic, can become exaggeration, can become, come si dice, laughable.
Yes. Yeah.
Instead of being a dramatic effect that he wanted. So it's an opera that brings many question marks, like the idea of the banda under the stage, that is supposed to create a sound that comes from Inferno, or the voice of the apparitions. And so to do an opera like this, you must have not only you must know Shakespeare, but Verdi knew Shakespeare. Of course, he didn't speak English, but he had a fantastic translation that was at that time in Italian of the Shakespeare works. And so even the beginning of Macbeth, so this beginning is clear that you have to understand that he tries to imitate the sound of an horrifying bagpipe. No? If you go and in front of an orchestra, you laugh. What is that? But you have two elements. One is the theme that is made by notes that create a circle, a ring. Fa so fa da ri ri da ri ri da ti ri ra da ri. So the notes close themselves, not in a ring. And every time Verdi writes about destiny or fate, he writes a theme that is circular. Forza del destino, tararari, tararari, da di da di da, and goes back. Rigoletto, tararari, ri ri, da di ra ra ra. It's always sort of the ring of the witches of And so this beginning, clearly with the clarinetto, oboe, and fagotto, he wants to create a sound that reminds of old instrument from Scotland. Like in the Brindisi, as I said to the chorus, it's not the Brindisi of Traviata. But should be strong and heavy like rocks. Because Verdi was he had a great imagination about also countries that he had never seen. Look, Aida. He was never in Egypt. But when you hear the beginning of you feel immediately that you are near the Nile, under in a blue night in with the moon and the stars and the water that shines, no? So this is like Debussy when he writes Le colline di Anacapri in the prelude. He was never in Capri.
Right.
Right. But he saw the image of Capri in on a bottle of wine. Mm-hmm. And from there, he understood the atmosphere. Yeah. But this is the genius. You know?
So Verdi is creating for us, orally and without words yet, both the feeling of the cast and the characters and their ideas, and also the geographic location.
Si.
And he's doing this in an interwoven way.
Like, for example, the band, the first band, tom pa pam pa pi rom ta 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 tom pa pa ra. If you play ya la 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 le ra, immediately you say, oh, these are the Italians that come, you know. But in this, si dice rustic way, mm-hmm. a very simple and very elemental, he wants to show the cortege, the court of the king of Scotland that are yum pa pam pa pa ta 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 tam pa pa. It's very elemental, very simple, and very strong.
Because they have a king, but they are living in a still quite pre-medieval way.
Primitive, yes.
Yeah, si, yeah. Si. Of course, there are two versions of Macbeth, the original, which was done for Florence, and then the revision for Paris, but also 20 so years almost had gone by. And you have, for the most part, played the second version. Philip Gossett, whom you know better than most people, probably, and you have collaborated with him on Verdi, Rossini, other projects, and you're even a kind of a touchstone in his book about production. He raises the argument that even if some of the pieces, the four major changes and additions, are, quote, better, unquote, that they're written from a different musical period and a different musical style, and that he doesn't see then how that fits in. Obviously, you have spent a lot of time with this piece and with making these choices, and I'm curious to know, how do you see the decision of using the second version?
See, I was very, I studied both versions very deeply, because when I decided to do Macbeth in 1974 in Florence for the first time, I was living in Florence, I was music director there, and so I knew that Verdi had written Macbeth for Teatro alla Pergola, o della Pergola, where I have conducted several times, and in the basement of the theater there is still the wooden chair where that Verdi used when he conducted the premiere of Macbeth. And when I did the recording, I used, I added as a bonus some of the arias of the first version. That are very difficult, but certainly not at the level at the quality of La Luce Langue that he added, for example.
They are difficult, but not at the artistic level.
No,
of
yes.
his later accomplishment.
Yes. The aria of the baritone in the end is a very small aria and is very touching. But Verdi took away in the second version because he preferred a much more grand finale with the chorus singing for the victory and the freedom. So we are also politically, we know that there was a political reason. The first version is much more crude, no? Raw.
Mm-hmm. Both. Yeah.
And the second version is much more refined. After 20 years, and about 20 years, Verdi became a much more refined composer. Mm-hmm. And so he touched the orchestration. He wrote the ballet music for Paris, but in the first version he didn't write the ballet music, but because Verdi generally didn't like to interrupt the dramatic action to please, as he had to do, the French people in Paris. When he did for the Sicilian Vespers, for Macbeth, for Le Trouvère, for Othello, etc., he wrote music that that in the end he liked, and he knew that he had written something not second class quality. So I have done always with the balletto, the and I have done always the second version. Sometime, like in Salzburg and in Roma, because Peter Stein, that I admire very much as a stage director, asked me to do the aria of the first version of the death of Macbeth, that aria where Macbeth throws away the crown and says that for the desire of power he was the victim, this stupid thing controls me. So the finale with the aria of Macbeth gives gives a soul to Macbeth.
Right.
The second version, he disappears, he dies in battle.
No more and, soul.
No, così. It's like a piece of meat that is killed. I used these two performances in Salzburg and in Roma, and also the first time that I did Macbeth in 1974, I used the aria of Macbeth, because stage directors like very much this for the possibility of working on Macbeth that dies on stage, crying.
But if you're doing a concert version, you don't need to worry about a stage director.
No.
It's heaven, huh?
No, but it's not that they were imposing.
No. You're talking about good directors.
Directors. But then after the aria, the finale is too short and too abrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we know that Verdi liked very much to end, boom, like this, suddenly. It's like you are in an open ocean and suddenly you find yourself in the port. And for example, Ballymaskera, you have the Ballymaskera, all this fantastic finale, Corsi grande generoso, everybody is singing, and then it's boom, bam, boom, finito.
Right.
So this is the style of Verdi in that period. The second version has this chorus that ends. It's a little bit pompous, is a little bit rhetoric, but has a meaning. I mean,
right.
It brings brings to conclusion heroic and patriotic conclusion an opera like Macbeth.
But you don't find that there is any sense of shifting gears between the 80% or so, that's mostly what he wrote the first time, and then the sections that he wrote when he was already in a more sophisticated style. You find that these weave naturally together, or is that a part of what the conductor has to contribute?
No, I think that the second version, as I said before, is much more refined, and you have to approach the second version ignoring the first version.
Okay,
the
that's
writing.
What I was.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very more mature, and
right.
So that is.
Right. What do you look for in the singers for Macbeth, and is there something special that you look for this opera as opposed to some others?
Now, this is the first thing is that I look for, I need this intelligent singers. We know that Verdi for Macbeth and Lady Macbeth wanted singers with not some beautiful voice, and that goes exactly what we said before. He had a concept of voice for this opera that was very special, very uncommon.
And we know specifically the singers that he could use and that he did use.
Si.
So we know there were choices made.
Si. In fact, the impresario wanted to have Tadolini, that was a very famous soprano at that time. And there is a letter of Verdi that says, Tadolini is not right for this part because la Tadolini ha troppo bella voce. She has too beautiful voice for this role. And he considers, it's interesting that he considered the part of Lady Macbeth extremely difficult, that it is. And he says, not easy like La Traviata.
it's a different definition of easy.
Sì, bravo. And so because I am sure that he meant that you need a woman and a singer that could psychologically go through the entire opera and conveys feelings that are almost not human, no? Mm-hmm. So subtle, so evil.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, the finale, the scene of sleepwalking, when the last page of Lady Macbeth is a sort of recitativo, mm-hmm. on a rhythmical element of the orchestra. That this movement is like the Lady Macbeth is trying to take away the blood from mm-hmm. her
damn spot.
See, and this sort of recitativo that ends with a very high pianissimo di flat.
Mm.
For a soprano drammatico o lirico spinto, like Lady Macbeth should be, to end the opera with a sound that is D flat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Verdi never wrote this, very seldom, not right. never, very seldom went in that register of the voice. So it means, again, that he wanted a sound not real, and mm-hmm. Not natural, unreal, and unnatural. And the baritone many times con voce muta, con voce soffocata, con voce parlata, he always insists on with the indications that have nothing to do with, especially considering the first Macbeth, with the operas that in that period just were coming out of the bel canto period.
Mm-hmm.
No,
mm-hmm. He's talking about a presentation that involves a speaking sound or thinking or acting in, as opposed to make it sound as perfumed as possible or as pretty as possible.
But, you know, he asked for all these things, but then in the end the baritone has to sing an aria.
That's right.
And that you cannot fake that. You have
right.
to sing. Pietà rispetto onore. Yeah, that the tradition has changed in pietà rispetto amore.
Mm.
But the original is pietà rispetto onore, because
mm-hmm.
Macbeth, old and full of pain, asks for pietà,
yes.
pity,
yes.
mercy,
yes.
respect,
yes.
and honor.
Right.
Not respect and love.
Yeah.
But because rispetto onore, there are two O, one near the other,
mm-hmm.
it's difficult. So pietà, rispetto, onore, too many O. So they said rispetto, amo. So it sounds beautiful.
We're speaking with Riccardo Muti, music director of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, about a composer extremely close to his heart and one who plays a very important role in the first month of Maestro Muti's residency for 2013-2014, as he has played an important role in Riccardo Muti's career from the beginning. A Verdi opera, in very many cases, also means chorus, and the chorus plays a key role. Or choruses, really, because you have witches, you have men, you have killers. How does the chorus function within the opera, and how does it function differently in Macbeth than from...
Verdi said very clearly the three personaggi are Macbeth, Lady Macbeth, and the witches.
Si.
So this says everything about the chorus. The part of the witches is extremely difficult, and the chorus is doing very well. And the finale of the first act, and the second act, but especially the finale of the first act, sounds like a big work of Michelangelo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so gigantic, and so it's like the really the entire world is collapsing because of the death of Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an opera that goes from niente sound, nothing in sound, to a massive sound that mm-hmm. you cannot even resist in hearing so much sound that he requires.
It's very interesting that you say that about Michelangelo, because we think of Michelangelo and we think of these giant works, but also if you look at the sketches or if you look at even the slaves, the delicacy and the intimacy and the way this man lived beyond a monk, I mean, with no possessions and with no desire. I mean, he wanted respect and he wanted to be paid, but that money went elsewhere. But Verdi, too, has this sense of going to the very, very alone figure.
Yes.
And also the canvas of these choruses, whether it's Aida, where it immediately makes sense, or if it's Traviata, Macbeth, different kinds of groups of people. But there's this sense of the artist expressing himself at the smallest and the biggest level, yes?
And in fact, in the finale of the first act, especially, you have the little pieces, a cappella parts, no, where the the solist have to sing pianissimissimos, and then the explosion of the entire orchestra and the entire chorus. So you go like Michelangelo from very tiny, delicate moment to St. Peter.
Right, right. But it is that breadth of humanity. It's not that he's only doing the one error.
Never for effect. Never for effect. This is one of the problems of Verdi interpretation, because many times the performances are based musically on effects of soloist and orchestra, you know, bombastic. Like you can be very loud and non-bombastic, and you can be mezzo forte and bombastic.
Yes.
No?
I felt this in your performance of the ballet music in the mixed variety of works in the concert, that to include the ballet music is another reminder that this is not a work about effect.
No.
Because the delicacy,
the pianissimo,
and the pianissimo, and also kind of storytelling for a mime or whatever.
And difficult to play,
yeah,
especially the finale.
You also have presented some of the overtures and individual choruses or scenes. How did you decide out of all of them, just ones that would
give
some variety?
That is not a philosophical just when I take pieces that I like and put together. It for this gala concert, it worked the series of pieces, soloist, chorus, etc. But I wanted, before we end, I wanted to say that the music of Verdi, to play well Verdi, is extremely difficult. It's much more difficult to play well Verdi than to play well Wagner.
Yes.
Even
because Wagner kind of sweeps everything
Even if
or?
The impression on the public is the contrary, that, you know, to play Wagner, it's so much going on, and that you think that it's extremely difficult. It is difficult, but Verdi requires not only a great precision, because the music is many times vertical, and so the intonation is very, very difficult. The quality of the sound, every chord must have a different color, different effect. Because every chord prepares a phrase or concludes a phrase. So there is not one forte, but there are thousands of different forte.
Right.
And then you have to find the timbres. You have to understand how to make the so-called accompaniments.
Right.
That should not sound like the Germans accused Verdi saying
Umpa
that
zumpa,
zumpa, pa. That was bad way of performing Verdi. And in fact, there is a famous story, a true story of, so this is, it's for Verdi, Bellini, Rossini, Donizetti, Mercadante, etc. That Serafin, in the 50s, he was conducting Roma.
Tullio Serafin.
Tullio Serafin, the great opera conductor, Italian opera conductor. And at a certain point, for several reasons, the administration took away two rehearsals from him. And so he was going in the corridor of the theater with this black hat, as you see, because I was, saying in full voice, they've taken away two rehearsals from me, but I'm doing Bellini, non-Wagner. That says everything, you know? Because with this simple music, you need to tell the musicians exactly how to play. It's not a natural way, in a symphonic way.
Right.
You have to understand exactly what every note means.
And you have to understand what to repeat a part or emphasize a part of what you just said. That, and let me just elaborate on a little bit, that the music is vertical as well as horizontal. Immediately, if you ask somebody, thinking, what are they talking about? They would say, oh, well, Verdi, he writes beautiful melodies, he writes beautiful marches. That's the horizontal, and it's there. If you take your hand and move it forward, there is the movement. But it's made of harmonics, and it's made of volume markings, and it's made of stylistic markings, and that's what makes it interesting. Otherwise, he's writing, I mean, with all due respect, Puccini, a great craftsman and beautiful melodies, but it's not anywhere around what's going on here. And to impress that on the orchestra and the singers, I think you said at one of the rehearsals, whenever the chorus is singing, it's singing something that is related to what is going on in the orchestra.
Absolutely.
And you have to have that in mind, and I think that's what it leads me to something that I want to say to you, and you may respond or not as you wish, but I was so impressed when you took the orchestra to Cicero, to the high school auditorium, which is not an ordinary high school auditorium. This is a big theater from 80 years ago, 90 years ago. You could go to a community and you could say, well, there are many Mexican people live there. We play in mariachi, and the Czech people lived here. We'll sing the song To the Moon of Rusalka, and maybe we'll play John
Carmen.
Philip Sousa. I'm sorry?
Carmen.
Yeah, we can play Carmen, sure. But you said, no, I'm going to not only bring Verdi, I'm going to bring some very unusual Verdi, and I'm going to bring the Brahms second, and I'm going to take the audience seriously and invite them to participate, and this audience was
fantastic,
like a magnet.
Yeah, because rarely I have heard such a silence, a meaningful silence,
an attentive, meaningful silence.
Sensitive,
yes.
And I was very impressed, and I would like to go back and to do concerts for these communities, because that will give to my last years of life a meaning, no, a reason.
Yeah,
if
yeah,
not,
yeah.
We go on just trying to make a big piece of music for ourselves to have the applause, and that period of my life has gone.
Right.
So I am much more interested in a concert like the community in Cicero, because then you bring home something.
But it's also important for an ongoing institution, which an orchestra is. An orchestra lasts 100, 200 more years. And for it to live and to breathe, it has to remember that, and seriousness can include light music and humor, but it has to take itself seriously, and then the audience will come to it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Riccardo Muti, it's well, as you might say, it's beyond a pleasure or a privilege. It's an honor to speak with you,
grazie,
particularly about Verdi. I do want to ask one last thing, though, back to Macbeth. Is there humor in Macbeth? Are there the versions of a comic aspect that exist in many of his works as a counterpoint? Or are the witches kind of between worlds, and maybe they present something of this?
You said between worlds.
Worlds, yeah.
That is the definition, perfect. Actually, I never heard this this definition.
Please quote me.
congratulate. Between, yeah, exactly. In fact, when Verdi says, don't forget that there are witches that speak, it doesn't mean to be funny.
Yeah.
He tells you to give some character, no? Carattere, some accent that identifies that these are not normal people, but as you said, figures between the worlds. Don't belong to don't belong to the air, don't belong to the inferno. But in let me think. No, there is nothing comic in Macbeth.
It's a dark world.
No. Yeah. There is only one phrase that can seem comic when I explain to the chorus, when Malcolm arrives and he says, dove siamo? Che bosco è questo? And then the entire chorus, La foresta di Birnamo. Because then seems that the general asks, where are we? And the entire army answers, the forest of Birnamo.
Well, Ricardo Muti is by no means between worlds, but he is comfortable and represents many worlds. And the world of the advocate of the composer, the guide of the performers and the orchestra, the communicator with the audience, but also through all of these things, the thinking, reflective, analytical, and poetic person. So, Ricardo Muti, thank you again, and we look forward to continuing these throughout the season.
Grazie, grazie infinite, and all the best for you and for the audience.
Ucciderti, sposa, ti bacio. Thank you.
We'd like to thank Celeste Roblowski, Raquela Rowe, Emilia Master, and Pete Fiumara for helping us make this interview happen. Joshua Savageau for recording the conversation with Ricardo Muti in a sitting room at the Four Seasons Hotel. Matt DeStefano, of course, for putting the program together and making it sound great. Music that you heard came from the first and last scenes of Verdi's Otello, just released on CD by CSO Resound, the second release of Ricardo Muti and the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. From live performances in Orchestra Hall in April 2011, get your copies today. You have, depending upon when you are listening to this program, a few more opportunities to hear Verdi's Macbeth at Orchestra Hall with Ricardo Muti, chorus and soloists, Tuesday, the 1st of October, and Friday, the 4th at 7, Sunday, the 6th, a matinee at 3 p.m., Thursday, the 10th of October, all around the world at CSO.org in Chicago, live simulcast, J. Pritzker Pavilion on a new big LED screen in Millennium Park. And if you already have tickets, inside Orchestra Hall, 7:30 p.m. Chicago time, October 10th, the Verdi Requiem on the exact 200th birthday anniversary of Giuseppe Verdi. Thanks to our funders, Alpha Wood Foundation, Dick and Susie Kiphart, and other friends of this program. Drop us a line, Rentap, that's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P, at AOL.com, and listen anytime, WFMT.com/critical thinking. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week.